All right. Now I would like to invite everybody up here, everybody who has been speaking so far. And I'll allow you a quick comment on what you've heard before we let the audience in. What very interesting things, what we've learned from these experiences about what politics or politicians do to the change in the development institutions. Do they proceed as they have always have, or do they have a big impact from the policymakers? Seem to be some similarities between the UK and England and Sweden as to what policy does to the process. And it would be interesting to know a bit more about how the system has been working, how as much it's been influenced by this, whether that's done the work better or not. And I'm also personally quite interested in what all this does to the things we had in the Paris Agenda. What about ownership, which I always thought was quite an important thing that seems to be on the back burner now, in some sense, where you have this strict focus on directly measurement results. So we'll open up to the audience, but if there's anything you want to comment on your colleagues here, you can get 1 minute each or so to add to the discussion we've had, or we throw it open. You'll see.
No, but we can. No.
Okay, up there, please introduce yourself as well. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
So I think you've already identified some of the differences in terms of political context, budgets, and Rebecca alluded to the problem of CEDA following DFID's footsteps and trying to apply solutions without really looking at the problem. I was just very interested in the mention you made of some of the results initiatives introduced to CEDA that less than 1% of the staff picked them up. And I just wondered, Brendan and Craig, do you think could that happen in DFID in the UK? Are we fundamentally very different? My kind of thesis is we are, but I'd just be interested to sort of hear a little bit more about how different the actors are in the institutions. And I'm assuming you've both read each other's papers. If there's sort of anything you could add to that, whether we behave very differently or not, whether bureaucrats behave differently.
Okay. Brendan, Craig.
Yeah, sure. So we did once get given a statistic, but we could never verify it, so I won't repeat it. But it wasn't a very high number of projects that were actually supposed to fulfill the quotas that I mentioned from the centre. It wasn't high, it was under 20% of DFID projects, I remember that much. But now I don't know whether that statistic is true or not. But what's important is that it wasn't just about the centre saying deliver these results, right? Like, that wasn't the only thing that was going on when all these results reforms happened. The quantification became so much more important. Planning and delivering on your plan became so much more important. The way we talked about aid changed. Suddenly it was all about what can UK aid buy or deliver, as opposed to what we support or cooperate or partner with people on. And so a huge amount shifted. So even if a specific and rather low amount of projects were delivering on the centralized targets in the UK, at least, I think that the overall impact on the organization was much, much bigger. And I don't know whether you agree with that from your perspective, Janet, on kind of, even if it's 1% of projects, does it influence the rest? You know, how do these things line up?
Yeah, and it's really, this was the 1%, it was in, if I remember it was during the CEDA rating initiative, and it was during a period in CEDA's time when it wasn't compulsory to actually rate. That's when you had that percentage. Then it arose within that, it rose to 25% in then when it was compulsory. So it's still quite of like low, but and today also with this latest initiative, it was in the beginning quite few, like 30% or something. But now, as I understand, it's 100% obviously the staff are actually fulfilling the targets. But at least from no, okay, I heard that number from someone, but it has been really quite difficult to get the numbers of compliance. But some of the few numbers I got was, that you know more.
Just may clarify, we actually killed the final initiative, so we do not have that result, because we did actually learn that it wasn't meaningful. It didn't actually, what was really great, I think what you brought up, is that it's good to have a purpose also for the results initiatives, and that's one thing what we have learned, not only to have a purpose but actually to communicate the purpose, but then also to verify, does this initiative actually serve its purpose? And that was the reason why we killed it, because it didn't. We had the wrong assumption. So that's why. So that's why it's not 100%. But it's, maybe it's a sort of misunderstanding with this whole track. Like, we do document the assessment of all programs, but that's assessment of many aspects, not only results.
I'd like to offer a quick reflection on Cathy's point as well. It's kind of building on Craig's observation. I think the results agenda in the UK was part of a kind of a paradigm shift in the way that the DFID looked at aid. So the results on the way that you're reporting results is only one cycle in that. Or one dimension of a cycle that development goes through. It goes through a ton of different types of cycles, from market-based logics to state-based logics to macro interventions to micro interventions. And if you look at the sort of trajectory of aid policy since the 50s, there's been a series of cycles, and they typically are all packaged together in a paradigm of which accountability and results reporting is one aspect, but there are a bunch of other aspects also packaged in. And one of the questions I had for Janet on that, so I think the results agenda is one of the first times when accountability really leads that paradigm, where the type of accountability is a sort of the front piece of a particular aid paradigm. And I suspect it's now moving on a little bit to a more sort of investment logic, of which results is a part, but isn't really the front piece of it. And I think that's what's happening in DFID at the moment. But I had a question for Janet. The degree to which the reforms that you're talking about are located or situated in a broader policy change, or are simply accountability reforms...
Because I had one that as a comment, because it's from the, if you look at the four initiatives I studied, it was two of them, the 81, and then the latest one was within center right wing government, but the other ones were not, so it's not like political. They were during social democratic governments, and they were not part of like larger political shifts. So it's for me, my explanation has really been that it's kind of like the time intervals, and it tends to be like what that we tend to forget about initiatives. It's, you can't launch something similar when something has just died, like 1 year after. You need to wait for a long time. People rotate, like you were saying, within CEDA. They go abroad, and then someone comes back, and there's other staff members, and then you can initiate something again. So it's rather the time intervals that has been, like, depending on that the initiatives have arisen during these four occasions.
Okay, more questions? At the back, last bench.
Hi, my name is Victor from an organization called Human Rights and Science. And an open question, what do you think are the effects for the beneficiaries of the results agenda?
Yes, I think it's
how
quite
does it look for a person who's
relevant question. The papers don't have too much about whether it was having an impact, which is good or bad, I think. Or?
Yeah, I mean, speak for our own paper, but it wasn't a review of the evidence on how effective, you know, results-based management has been at the local level. I mean, in the context of our interviews, we heard a huge amount of a huge amount of smoke, and were rarely given a fire, if you like. You know, there was a lot of people would say negative things, but it wasn't in their project, right? And that was because people don't want to go on record about things that are very difficult. The one experience I can give you that I think is relevant to this is I did some separate work on a project on community justice in Bangladesh, And you can find that report online on my profile online. And that was one of the projects, that's part of the reason I gave the example during my presentation, that was delivering results to the central target of improved access to justice for women and girls. And it's not a huge part of the work that we did, but we did show that one of the big challenges was that the DFID and therefore their partners felt they needed to reach as many women and girls as possible with this program. And that has some negative side effects, right? Like, for example, the project staff not having enough time and resources to deal with sensitive cases of domestic violence appropriately. Now, we didn't look into that issue enough to then be able to say that was specifically a problem that we can evidence, right? That we can say, here's a woman who had her case was worse because of this, and so I can't claim that. But what I can say is just I saw how stretched people were. I saw how many cases they had. I saw how sensitive they were. And when you're going for these reach indicators like that, you will stretch people. And that's I'm sure of.
Okay, Rebecca.
Yeah, I think that before answering that question, I think it's important to define what do you mean by results agenda or results-based management. For me, for example, results agenda is one thing, results-based management is another thing. As we see it at CEDA, it's an approach where you ask yourself, what do we want to achieve? And once you have started something, you ask, okay, what does this lead to? What should we do differently? If you have that approach, I've seen with my own eyes, if a desk office, for example, asks its cooperation partner, okay, great, but those workshops, what have they actually led to? What signs do you have of the target groups changing its behavior or mindset or whatever? And how do you think that in the end may possibly in the long term affect beneficiaries? And I've seen, you know, when that happens. But of course, if you with results agenda mean when you have incentives for as many quantifiable indicators, outputs and so on. I mean, we have many, unfortunately, humoristic but very sad stories within CEDA as well when cooperation partners have felt forced to, you know, create as many outputs as possible but not necessarily the best positive change. So it depends on what you imply with the question.
Okay. Janet?
From my point of view, I haven't either in my thesis looked at the effects. It's more about CEDA and how CEDA staff kind of talk about how it influences recipients. And as I said in my presentation, it's really the reason for why the initiatives have kind of been thrown away is because staff say that they have been negative or have negative consequences for the recipients. I can't judge if that is true, but it's... I think there are really, from my own experiences, this really, the results agenda has been beneficial for recipients, and some organizations really tend to like learn from results information and do something good about it and use it in a very good way. So it's there are positive examples on that, and there are also negative examples on organizations that don't, where it's only becoming an obsessive measurement disorder or whatever term you use for it. And I think we have a new research project together with Susanna here. We are actually trying to look at what are the factors actually influencing what type of organization you become. If you tend to like learn about it, what are the factors influencing that you do something good about it, and when does it actually become negative? And I think that question, I don't have the answer for that right now, but I think it's a really important question because it's really, of course, everyone wants to use results information for good purposes and for learning, and that's what, like Rebecca said in the beginning or in your presentation, that's really the whole aim of results-based management. It's not in the definition per results-based management per se, which is bad, but it's kind of like in the use of it and what happens in organizations sometimes with it. Yeah.
Okay, quick one.
Also comment on that one. I think it's just, particularly as we have it now in the UK and Sweden, it's important to remember, I mean, how it's actually looked, because, and remind ourselves that all through this period, CEDA has stuck to the principle that it's the partner that provides the project proposal, and we are using the partner's own indicators, so on. Correct me if I'm wrong. And so I mean, it has been a very big difference between how you worked and now how Sweden worked, and particularly now the signals. it might be a question of timing and forgetting things, but of course it's also a matter of, I believe, political signals, and now the government is trying to signal very strongly the principles for aid and development effectiveness, the flexibility and those things. And I think that, of course, this... the UK experience has been very helpful for us because we've learned a lot without having had to be through everything that you've been through. So, and in the long run, of course, it will benefit the beneficiaries if we have a good way of working on results and follow-up.
But what you're saying is that ownership still matters to Swedish aid.
Definitely, if you speak to our government.
Yeah, that's nice. Okay, up there.
Hi, my name is Victor. I'm from CEDA, the Asia unit, and I just have a question regarding the paradigm shift. I wonder if it's about to shift again in light of the new information, because the report stops at Priti Patel, but now we have a new situation where aid in the UK is being debated in parallel with the UK's exit from the European Union. And this has kind of tarnished the whole industry, regardless of whether you're doing well on this results-based management. There is now a petition going around talking about reducing aid to 0 or 0.3% because charity begins at home. I'm just wondering if this will affect. And I think there's a difference between Sweden and the UK in this regard, because the media there is coordinated. There is a coordinated attack on aid in the UK. I think you know about the Ethiopian Spice Girls, etc. And now they're portraying Oxfam and everybody else as sex predators. So I'm just wondering if this will affect the approaches they're using.
Okay.
I mean, political crystal ball gazing at the moment in the UK is a difficult thing. It's really, really hard to see. Every single prediction I've made politically over the last 5 years have been wrong. It's very difficult to know. What I do know is that the Conservative government has retained its commitment to 0.7% repeatedly. And is still making that commitment despite intense pressure from the right-wing press. And I think there's a slightly different trend in the left and in the right, supporting aid for slightly different reasons. But I don't see these as stopping altogether. They might be reformed, but I don't see them stopping for what my view is worth. So I suspect what you will see is a repurposing of aid, and you've already started to see that, for British interests. That's already started to happen, and it's explicit. It's explicit in the UK aid strategy. So I think you'll see increasingly aid being used, ODA spending in the 0.7% for British interests of one sort or another. And that's if a Conservative government stays in. If a Labour government stays in, it's all open again.
All right, so the content of British aid is changing rather than the quantity? Support for trade and stuff like that?
At a guess, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we are not as like-minded as we were, maybe. Okay. Please.
Hi, Annika is my name, and I'm working at the civil society sector in Sweden for many years. And I just wanted to comment or question, in terms of what happened in Sweden, I think compared to what happened in the UK, it was interesting because there was a big pushback from the civil society sector, as I remember it. It was this pushback network that was started and was then renamed to Push Forward, which we were extremely inspired from in Sweden, because the civil society here was sort of grappling a little bit, because we weren't affected as badly as you were, and we didn't have sort of the theoretical background in the same way that you had also with INTREC and those other agencies helping. So that was very, very important, I think, for civil society in Sweden to learn from that that initiative as well. But I think also, so in terms of our relationship to CEDA, there was always a pushback also still from the Swedish civil society. There was always debate around the agenda. It wasn't picked up. There was always sort of questioning, and we were always trying to maneuver the space for our partners to be able to go on with their work. So I think that was an important thinking about when we're talking about how much it was picked up by CEDA. I think there was always also a dialogue with between civil society and CEDA that was quite fruitful. So different parts of CEDA was differently open, I would say, to discuss the results agenda and the effects of it. I would say in Sweden that the political context also did affect the results agenda. It was also a political agenda, but it was also a part of the public management shift that happened with all different government entities. And I've always been so surprised that sort of the development aid sector is a bit isolated from the other ones in terms of the shift now. As you were saying, now it's the agile, you know, agility, management by agility and so on. And it's coming into CEDA, but sort of last or something. It sort of has its own mechanism, the development aid, and it's more influenced by that other development aids, but instead of the other government way of managing in the country. When I'm also thinking about where we are standing today, I think in terms of your question, in terms of what are we bringing on, now when we talk about doing development differently, it is very much as what we talked about, ownership, flexibility, adapting, understanding the context, understanding the complexity of the world. So it's coming back, I think, to where we were many years ago and understanding how change come about. So I'm sort of positive in how it looks ahead in terms of understanding the what we're working in and for whom. And just a question about the terms of if it how it affected the rights holder. I think it was it affected the rights holder in a bad way. As we don't have the maybe evidence, but just assumptions that you have centrally defined indicators in itself, then you lose the ownership. I mean, the whole setup that you have to implement plans that may be not relevant. The accountability to the donor rather than to the right holder in itself loses the ownership and the efficiency and effectiveness, I would say. So that was just a couple of reflections.
Comment? Rebecca?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I think it's interesting that you brought up this how the fact that having centrally defined indicators and plans that you have to follow, that of course have affected rights holders negatively, and I know that has. What I find interesting though is that as long as I've been working within CEDA, there have not been any formal requirements on having standard indicators, centrally defined indicators, following the plan. There have always been sort of written that you can adapt plans. But the interesting thing, how it works in reality, and that's why I think it's important to make that distinction, because if we want to change things, we have to learn what's the problem and why. Because I think it's sort of the psychological aspect of results-based management. It's so seductive in its simplicity. And I think, therefore, sometimes desk officers and also managers sort of think that we have, with the jargon of RBM, we have started to look at reality in a too simplistic way. And I think that's interesting, because even without having had those formal requirements and without having obeyed the requirements, as somebody asked about before, that the fact that Janice said that it was so few who actually sort of follow the rules within CEDA, I think that's fun anyway. So, but nevertheless, we've had that psychological thing, and that's what we try to address now. And that's why, as you pointed out, different desk officers, unfortunately, say have different requirements with the partners. And that's what we are working on right now in CEDA to sort of show this approach.
Yeah.
Just a remark on the big push forward. It's really good to hear that had some sort of influence. Kathy up there was sort of instrumental, and Janet also played a role, and myself as well a wee bit. So it's good to hear that it created a bit of space. My feeling is that it maybe in the UK it contributed a little bit of space. but that that space has been used by things like the adaptive management that Craig's been influential in, and that sort of way of looking at aid and way of pitching aid in a sort of more complex and more sophisticated way, that's really been the movement that has filled in that space, which has been, it's been interesting. It's a bit of an interesting policy thing to look at in itself. I think the adaptive management thing has done so at a cost by losing the politics, by rendering it into a technical discussion. So you lose the and I think that's probably a tactical decision, because just to create the space and then create space for people to work politically. But yeah, I guess another observation is that the sector is so diverse. There's so many different disciplines ready to argue for that room, and that the sector is going to shift again, and then another paradigm will come to play.
Okay. Lennart Wolgemuth.
Lennart Wolgemuth, Gothenburg University. Craig raised before a question, if I understood it at least that way, that if these four different tides that Janet describes, if they were connected with general developments in Sweden, and that is really so. I mean, it's not, and I think Janet describes this very well in her dissertation. I mean, she talks about the context in Sweden and how sort of these four drives came from similar drives in government development in Sweden. So, I mean, there is a connection. And that takes me to Rebecca's point on learning. Because, I mean, you said if you would have known, if you would have read and learned from the past, you would have been able to act differently. I would say, I'm questioning that. I'm sad to say, because I'm working a lot on learning. But what Janet describes, for example, from the last developments at SIDA, there is a very interesting letter from the majority of the leadership of SIDA to the minister, where they, based on their sort of experience from the past, they draw a lot of conclusions on what is problematic with this new drive of result management. And the minister just gets upset about that they are obstructing what she wants to undertake. So, I mean, it is difficult with learning, because what we see here is a sort of a combination of many similar processes. One of them, of course, short-term politics that you describe very well in the UK setting. I mean, it's specific people who are acting in specific ways. And, of course, to come up with long-term learning when it comes and point at what you have learned from 50 years of aid experience, which is very well documented, is hopeless. So, I mean, there is some difficulties with learning. And I only hope that Lennart Peck is right, that the present staff and the politicians are actually learning from the past and from what Janet and all the rest are writing. Thank you.
Rebecca?
Yeah, I just want to say that I fully agree that learning is difficult, because firstly you have to admit that you were wrong, that you had wrong assumptions. But when I talk about those initiatives, especially the two last ones that I was involved in, as I said before, it was SIDA's own initiatives. Of course, it was this informal steering that made us think that, oh, we have to sort of document and so on more. But I think it's important to make the distinction. For example, when you talk about that letter, that had to do about how we report to the government. But those initiatives that we did them for our own sake, because we had a hypothesis that the development aid would become better if we sort of would extract results data from the reports that we would receive from our cooperation partners into a system, and then that would improve our assessments. But we never formally had a requirement to do that. So in that sense, one could say, like, I mean, politics is politics, but I think, like, within an organization, at least the methods people could learn something. At least we would call it something different. We'd package it differently, at least, you know. So some kind of learning, I do still believe in certain spectra.
Yeah, Lennart.
I'd like to enter with a comment here. I don't not exactly how it fits, but it can also be said to be a promotion of the event taking place at CEDA tomorrow. I think one important aspect here is what I know you are going to speak about at CEDA tomorrow, this thing about different levels in the systems have partly different concerns, different information needs. And yes, it's a fact that at a certain level, it's totally useless to collect any aggregated data. Of course, in my current position now, when you are trying to, or you are obliged to, according to the budget law, the government shall present their overall reports to the parliament, then we are, of course, speaking about totally other, different information needs. So just a call for an understanding here of different information needs at different levels. I mean, both from a government level, what is actually needed on the ground, including the costs for doing all this follow-up and so on, but also, of course, an understanding at ground what is actually needed by CEDA for you to manage the programs and ensure, as you're also obliged by law, effectiveness and efficiency in all public activities and also higher ups. It's just this understanding.
Thank you.